This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Tried to date, but a year to make love, she wanted you to wait. Let me tell you a story of my situation. I was talking to this girl from the U.S. nation. The way that I met her was on tour at a concert. She had long hair and a short mini skirt. I just got on stage dripping, pouring with sweat. I was walking through the crowd, and guess who I met? I whispered in her ear, come to the picture booth so I can ask you some questions to see if you're 100 proof. I asked her her name, she said blah, blah, blah. She had 9-10 pants and a very big bra.
Place to Be Nation, welcome inside the war zone, the wrestling war zone, Monday Night Wars retrospective podcast series. I'm JT, along behind my co-host, Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm doing pretty good. Pretty uneventful week, but I'm hanging in there. This January's felt pretty long for me.
I feel like it's long and fast at the same time, though. Like, it's, like, next week it's over. Like, but it hasn't, like, it felt like we were just almost at New Year's, you know? So it's weird. It's dragging, but it's not. I don't know. It's an odd thing.
It's been a long one for me. Okay. I think I need like a trip or something to look forward to kind of project.
Come up to New York City.
I did price some hotel rates and flights and will not be making an appearance at WrestleMania.
Hotel, I'd have you covered. So you just go look at flights.
Yeah, I will not be making an appearance at WrestleMania 35, I think I can officially say.
All right. Well, anyway, so you had said earlier you were a little bit sluggish, a little tired, and I got you fired up on the Braves for 15 minutes before we recorded, and now you're ready to go, right?
Get the juices flowing, so ready to dive into some 95 action here.
Very good, very good. So last week we took a look at World War III, the pay-per-view. And as we usually do when we come off a pay-per-view, we kind of hit with that same show the next night. So that will be bringing us to Monday Nitro, where we'll be starting things off from Salem, Virginia, November 27th, 1995. So we'll see what happened with the fallout. We talked a lot about, you know, kind of the controversy at the end of the pay-per-view and how maybe they could have saved some of it tonight. But we'll see if they go ahead and do cover some of that. So why don't you go ahead and get us fired up there, John?
Just call me Jeff.
Or did you say Chad? I said Chad. Oh. I don't do enough shows with Jeff to confuse you with him.
Okay. Sort of satellite Jeff trailing. Salem, Virginia. Kind of a weird town. I didn't know what was in there. Apparently, the Salem Civic Center is where they hold the Division III basketball tournament. So, it said this venue is like 6,000 seats, though. So it's pretty big. But
of course, we were in Norfolk last week.
Right. At the Scope, so. Yeah. So we're in Salem, Virginia. We have Pepe in a leopard print cowboy hat combo and outfit. So leopard print seems to be coming back in style. So so 24 years ahead of the curve with Pepe.
He's on it.
Well, Bobby has a little Japanese flag that he's flying around. He's keeping kayfabe alive there. And Eric sets the table for tonight, says Hogan and Savage will be face-to-face. Bobby talks about the controversy from last night and, you know, what's going to happen. he did say people were coming up into the airport and asking him about it, but I'm sure that was happening, knowing Bobby. Everybody's talking about it. Eric then transitions into tonight with Sting and Luger teaming up. And Mongo had an interesting line on commentary where he says, the little guy has the animal print on because these guys are ready to eat raw meat. So,
there you go. A little shot.
A little bit of continuity there. We get clips of Hogan's interview with Gene from the night before, where he sheds the dark side, but nothing of the kind of inside baseball comments or the right. burning of the Observer, just the storyline stuff. Bobby brings up that Luger was a horseman, which I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was – this was a much improved night for Bobby, I would say, overall
yes.
than the night before. And that's kind of it. So any thoughts on our opening there? Or
no, they're always pretty thorough. They tend to cover a lot in those openings, you know, especially when they're coming off the pay-per-view. We showed the clips, talked a lot about what happened. So, no, that's just fine.
And our first match is Johnny B. Badd versus Diamond Dallas Page, a repeat of the opener from the pay-per-view. Kimberly is out with Badd and shoots the Badd blaster for him. Mongo says the fans want to see some action, and it's right here, darling, not somewhere else. So Mongo with our first shots fired.
I wonder if like he just like in. I wonder if he just loved Eric doing it and like thought it was funny, or did they really piss him off when he was in WWE for those few weeks? Because it's like he is really like on, like him and Eric, or like Bobby never says anything, but Eric is. I mean, Mongo's like loves doing the taking the shots.
Yeah, it's wonder if he was like angling for a deal. I mean, that's possible. Like he felt like he kind of got shut down, and you know, kind of like a you know a scorned lover a little bit.
Something's going on. I mean, he's very aggressive against them.
I thought this was you know I was kind of looking forward to Down on Your Luck Diamond Dallas Page. I don't know when it started, if it was this soon, but yeah, it's right out of the gate where the next night he comes kind of wallowing out. He looks real disheveled. He has flowers in his hand. Bobby points out no sunglasses and a cigar, so DDP hands Kimberly the flowers, and then sucker punches Badd, which I don't know what he was looking at. He was kind of staring off into space, but that starts the match. And they go back and forth for about a minute, and we cut. It's mostly the cameras on the outside, though, with Kimberly and kind of her emotions on whether she enjoyed getting the flowers or – it's kind of a conundrum for her, and then we see her digging through the flowers, and she finds a chain mm-hmm. that presumably Diamond Dallas will ask her to use during the match. And sure enough, about 30 seconds after that, Dallas calls for the chain, and she kind of slides it to him, but it goes under his legs to Johnny B. Badd, who socks him with it and pins. So. Mm-hmm. It's a little ambiguous whether Kimberly meant to slide it to Paige or meant to slide it under his legs. It's actually kind of interesting the way they do it. And she's not she's not a great actor by any stretch of the imagination, but she's not terrible in this role. So Johnny's a little bewildered on the outside, and he's kind of asking who she was throwing the chain to, and she says, "Oh, you won. That's the point." And raises his hand, and then Bobby says that Lady Di's got nothing on her, which is a lot of Princess Diana references between the two shows tonight. So, I thought this was good angle advancement for what they were going for. Not much of a match, so I went 3/4 of a star.
What was she doing? Like, why was she in the news this week?
I don't know. I meant to look that up because, yeah, they were really hammering that home. Maybe it came out she was dating that other guy.
Interviewed Diana. Oh, she was just on BBC November 20th, 95. Discussed her and her husband's extramarital affairs, referring to Charles' relationship with Camilla. So, yeah, looks like there was a big interview like the week before.
So, there we go.
That'll do it. Because I was like, I didn't think she died yet. That was a little bit later, so.
No, yeah, I'll have to tell you about the we may not get much.
We're not going to get Diana 3 years when she passes away.
So I was at I was living in Alabama at that point, and I was at a auction. Mm-hmm. They had like a little auction, and then we came back and found out that Princess Diana died. But I got a wrestling related story for Princess Diana, which I thought was funny. I heard on a podcast.
Okay.
Do you know who Dennis Corluzzo is?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you've been from the he's on some of those ECW shows, isn't he?
Yeah,
from
93.
Yeah, okay.
And he was also on Raw in 98 when he came in with Cornette during that whole thing.
I forgot about that. Okay, so apparently, like at this, I think it was an IWA Mid-South show right after Princess Diana died. Corluzzo was a heel manager at the time. So they were doing a 10-bell salute for Princess Diana at the show. And I think they were like on bell number 5 or 6. But supposedly, like, Corluzzo had a hot mic in the back, and to like rile up the crowd and get some heat, he just came through the curtain and was like, "Yo, yo, fuck that bitch." Like, talking about the death of Diana. So, getting heat off of Princess Diana, a legend of the wrestling business, of course, deserved the 10-bell salute.
Right. So you think they did the salute just to do the heat?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I just always think that's humorous that, like, people are standing and taking their cap off for Princess Diana in a wrestling ring, but and then Corluzzo just coming out, so.
Well, there you go. So where'd you go for a grade on this one?
3/4 of a star. Okay. It wasn't much to it.
Yeah, no. Eric did say Kim looks happy as she comes out. But Bobby says she'll leave him if he loses too, which I thought was pretty funny. DDP brings out the roses, like you said, and just uses it all as a setup. Bobby jokes that the chain's a bracelet. That made me laugh when she pulled it out of the flowers. And then, yeah, we get the little subterfuge. I think she was doing it on purpose that she was sliding it to bad. I mean, they do play it off like a little ambiguous, but I think it's pretty clear that she shoves it hard enough to go through his legs and she's fucking with him. And then I do like that Kim, though, is like they're showing that she's taking her cues from DDP for all this time. Like, she's just like, well, you won, who cares? You know, like, she's not really a goody two shoes just because now she's with Bad and left DDP. It's just that he was a douche. So I kind of like that piece of it. Mongo calls her a viper, so he's not buying her her nice act. And just a way to finish this off and let Kim kind of fully sever from Paige. I want a star and a half just for the story stuff, and it was fine. But again, I'm done with this angle. Like, I'm ready for it to be over with. So hopefully this is about it, and we don't get too much more. But yeah, Mongo's not too thrilled with Kim's actions. Viper,
yeah,
baby.
They're not even really teasing anybody else, like fighting one of these two
right
now. So,
no.
I don't know. We will see.
Yeah.
I really don't remember, so I'll find out together with everybody else. Then we get this is becoming kind of a weekly segment and one of my least favorite, mm-hmm. with Kevin Sullivan and Jimmy Hart having an interview with Mean Gene. I'm just done with Sullivan. Yeah. I really am. And by the week, it's getting worse and worse.
You got a lot more
in this role. I know. It's just as we talked about, he's not a threat. So him getting all this mic time, and he's just not that great of a promo either. Like, right. Like they act like he's, you know, Ric Flair out there, but he's not.
Jimmy's carrying him for sure.
Yeah. So Sullivan's saying, you know, he thought Luger would be in the Dungeon of Doom if it wasn't for Sting, and he's kind of yelling at Hart, saying, you know, hey, Jimmy, what's going on there? And Hart just basically tells him to calm down and trust him because he was Sullivan's first manager when he got in the business, and that Luger eventually would join the Dungeon. And Hart says that him and Luger and Sting have a plan. So that seems to put Kevin Sullivan's mind at ease.
Yeah, because he's pissed that they're butting around. He says that Luger's going soft because of Sting, and if he would have held on to Savage's arm instead of letting go of the hold when Sting got in his ear, then Savage wouldn't be champion, and Hogan's out of the picture, and one of them would be champion. So, I mean, at least the logic there is pretty good, I thought. like you know, calling out Luger for letting Sting talk him out of what his job should have been, and that would have been injuring Savage. So that part was fine. Now, this is better than some of the usual ones we get from them. But Jimmy's definitely usually the highlight, tying the story together with Sullivan and these things.
And that puts us right into our second match, which is a repeat also from the pay-per-view of Cutie Suzuki and Mayumi Ozaki versus Bull Nakano and Akira Hokuto. And immediately Eric starts peppering Bobby with questions about what's going on with WCW Pro and what's happening with his relationship with Sonny Ono. Bobby says, you know, that's all red tape, but, you know, they've got it figured out. Sonny's a smart businessman, his usual shtick from that. I think this match really complements the pay-per-view the night before.
Yeah.
Because you can see some things that work the night before that don't work here. and they do a lot of great callback spots, which Joshi in particular is good at doing that with matches that progress. So Suzuki and Osaki get a fast start, you know, before they were kind of slow off the gate. So right here they jump the bigger opponents. But Bull's able to pull Cutie to the outside, and then the heels take over on Mayumi. Bull slings Mayumi by the hair, and Eric, like, goes nuts over that. Bobby says it looks like someone's blocking McMichael, which I thought was a pretty funny line. And I mean, Bobby on commentary, I mean, he had a couple lines here. So, one, he said that Bull was attractive in an oriental way.
A rather oriental way.
Yeah, so there was that. And then he also did his Hiroshima Heimlich joke that died for the second time in 2 days, but he had to roll it out there. But overall, he seemed a little more invested, I guess, because he saw the match the night before and knew that they could go.
Right. So yeah.
He gave it a little more respect, it seemed like. Osaki is able to roll to a tag to Cutie, who hits a nice dragon suplex for a quick two. She goes for a dive, but gets caught in a fallaway slam, and then a Bull on top goes for the leg drop, which as soon as she starts climbing to the top, the crowd is really reacting to that.
Oh, yeah, they buzz big time.
Yeah, so she misses the leg drop. Suzuki, a little bit of a botch as she tried a front roll that didn't quite work out, but they cover pretty quickly with some stereo stomps, a double stomp from the top. Bobby also did call Bull bigger than a Honda right here. And then she sort of tees off on both again, but gets drop kicked off the top rope. Hokuto saves Bull and then tries to do her front flip, front somersault dive that she did the night before, but she misses this time. Mm-hmm. So again, some good continuity there. Bull catches both with a double clothesline, but Hokuto misses the missile drop kick, and then she hits a nasty fisherman's buster on the Suzuki to win. And I thought it was a good piece of commentary by Eric mentioning that that's also Kinsuke's finisher.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, another good showing from the ladies here. Mongo was all fired up throughout. I mean, I think we both kind of like Mongo through his faults, and I will say he's very energetic. Like he seems like he is, whether it's genuine or not, he seems impressed.
Oh, I think it's genuine. I think he loves all this stuff. Like you can tell he's just having a blast and he loves doing it. So no, it's infectious. I mean, it brings an energy that was lacking on Raw, that made and adds to the live feel of Nitro because he's reacting in the moment. It's stuff he's never seen, and he's capable enough. You know, it's not like he's being completely carried. Like you could tell he's trying and he's learning and he's better week after week. And you know, there's a likable energy about him. And I think it even carries over to when he wrestles. And it's evidenced by his crowd reactions, at least at first. It gets old after a while. But for that first year he wrestles, it carries over where the crowds is very into him and his style and his energy here on TV comes across as very enthusiastic. It's a nice compliment to Bobby's kind of, you know, deadpan dry humor.
Right. So, I mean, I didn't think this was quite as good as a pay-per-view match, but, you know, really good still for the time it got. I mean, I think this probably only went like 6 or 7 minutes. So I went 3.25 for this one, a good TV match.
Yeah, let's see. Just cramming out the time. Went 5:24.
Yeah, I mean, they packed a lot into just over 5 minutes.
I like the Ono stuff, and they're going to really start hitting it hard because obviously Starrcade is now next up. So they're really pushing the TV negotiation stuff. The Oriental Way attractiveness line, of course. Nice German by Suzuki on Hokuto. I like that. And I agree with you. The crowd really buzzed big time when she went up for that guillotine. Like they were waiting for it, and it was a cool moment. And then she misses it, and they kind of bit on it. So that was nice. I like the double stomp off the top by Suzuki and Osaki. I thought that was good. Not a lot of non-stop action throughout. Like you said, they packed a lot into the 5 minutes. I like where Hokuto misses the somersault senton and hits Bull on the floor by accident with it. And then, like you said, the brain buster or the fisherman's buster was awesome. And I thought Suzuki and Osaki get a little bit more in, but I'm guessing that's because of the compressed time frame. So obviously there's going to be less on both sides, but it must have balanced out a little bit more because I felt like they were more in the match. So maybe that speaks to them like learning from the night before as well. But this is a lot of fun. Just like you said, a slight step behind World War III. But this has been a real fun addition to WCW. We'll see if it's more than two nights or if, you know, they're going to stick around at all, any of them. But it's been a nice highlight on these two shows. I went 3.25 on this as well. And it's something I'd like to see continue, because it could be, again, something that they hold that WWF is lacking now that their women's division is pretty much going to be on life support, as we'll see. I think that this is a nice bonus for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, too good showing. Mm-hmm. I mean, wish it would continue. I know Miko Satomura is on some of these shows coming up, so be on the lookout for that. Then we get the rundown of WCW Saturday Night.
Yes.
So on the mothership, we have Sting versus Kurosawa, which actually kind of sounds halfway interesting. Dean Malenko, who I don't think, was he in the World War III?
I don't remember you mentioning him.
No, me either. So that's weird, because I'm pretty sure he would have, you know, we'd have said he'd have made the Royal Rumble cut.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. Yeah, maybe he was hurt or something.
It was very strange. The American Males, and then our big main event, Jim Duggan versus B.K. Walsh. So
a big fallout for World War III team, doesn't
it? Yeah, they're blowing that one off on the mothership there.
Mothership, so. Baby.
There we go. And then that kind of segues right into our next match, which is Hugh Morris versus Hulk Hogan. I kind of got, in the beginning, sort of a Saturday Night's Main Event vibe from this match.
Yeah.
Like, it sort of felt like, you know, Hogan versus the big monster de jour.
Mm-hmm.
And we get our only Where the Big Boys Play that I found out, that I heard from Eric. Eric calls Hogan the biggest boy in WCW. and then this was a Mongo line I don't know exactly what he meant by, because, I mean, he was talking about Hogan, but he said, like, my grandmother told me if it looks like a skunk and smells like a skunk, it is a skunk. And then Bobby said your grandmother probably put that skunk in a pot and ate it. So, I mean, but...
I think he's talking about Luger, maybe.
I guess, but it was almost like they were talking about Savage and Hogan, so it was like, was he saying, like, Savage paid off the referees? Or I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense. But anyway, I mean, it could have just been he was a little tangled. But
well, he's also not always purely a face. So, I mean, he might just be kind of calling it as he's seen it, that something fishy's up, you know?
Yeah. Now,
knowing Bischoff, and especially later, where he kept, like, the commentators were in the dark on a lot of stuff, like, because he wanted, like, the genuine reaction.
That's true.
So it's possible that Mongo really doesn't know that, like, Savage, like, like, he might just be calling it as he's seeing it, right?
Oh,
that, okay,
God.
Well, maybe this is where it's headed. I mean, you don't know, because that's definitely a thing that's been talked about in later years.
Yeah.
He would want that genuine reaction, so he wouldn't tell the announcers when something was coming, so. And that's what leads to stuff like Bobby spoiling the biggest turn in wrestling history, because he
whose side is he on? Yeah, it's like, come on. Mongo. I've been watching. Caden's watching a lot of Royal Rumbles.
Yeah.
So Royal Rumble's definitely his favorite match. So every night, can we watch a Royal Rumble? And watching it with Caden and the way he reacts is not too unsimilar from how Mongo commentates on some of the
stuff. You start getting the dog dressed up then before you watch.
We do have a Yorkie that we probably could
there you go.
Roll out some outfits like Pepe. So I may work on that. Have our own Nitro party.
Send the tape with it tonight.
Yeah. I mean, this match is nothing substance-wise, but the crowd reaction is quite amusing here. Hugh Morris gets a bit of a generic offense. And, I mean, Hogan, all he's doing is raking the eyes and punching. I know you crapped on Hogan's drop toe hold or
slow
whatever
motion,
a couple
slow
weeks ago.
Drop toe hold, yes.
Okay, well, I would gladly take that, no matter how slow the motion is in his offense arsenal here. Hugh Morris gets a bit of a face pop after being sent in the corner, running up the ropes and then hitting Hulk with a clothesline. And then, about like 15 seconds after that, Eric is like, oh, they're chanting Hogan's name. And I mean, literally nobody was.
No one. It's dead.
Like, absolutely not.
We've talked about before, like, Hogan towns on these Nitros. We've had some. Virginia is not a Hogan state.
No.
After the last two nights, it's very clear. They are not a pro Hogan state. We've seen some pro Hogan ones. He's gotten cheered, but tonight and last night, no.
I mean, Salem is where Roanoke College is. Perhaps there was a lot of college kids. So,
no, maybe.
I mean, they're just not going to care for Hogan.
Getting fed off CRZ.
So, I mean, Morris hits the No Laughing Matter. Hulk hulks up after that to a lot of boos.
Yeah, just apathy.
And then, just one of the worst reactions for the Hulk up I can recall.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I mean, it's a formality after that where we get the big boot, the leg drop, and a three count. So I want a star for this. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't a good match, but again, it was quite the scene to see. I think this is probably the farthest Hogan has dropped, actually, in my mind, with all the stuff we've seen, because, I mean, it's not like Hugh Morris is this hot up and coming. I mean, you know, right. I mean, he's a fat guy that does a moonsault, but you know, it's not like he was in there with Eddie Guerrero or
right, yeah, yeah, someone that
Chris Benoit, right. You know, somebody really dynamic where you can say, oh, well, I mean, he's up against a young talent, so or even Pillman like clowning right. on him. I mean, this was a very generic heel that for years and years Hulk would have gotten a positive reaction against. And
yeah,
he just
run his formula through and get the pop. You know, that would have been Yeah, very random. I mean, it's a nice showcase spot for Morris. That's good. At least something for him. Hogan's full red and yellow again. The black is behind him. Eric and Bobby really put over Hugh Morris here, by the way. It's crazy. So they put him over big time. And Eric also calls attention to him a den of psychopaths. Hulk does his limb and mat work, and Hugh just strikes right back. A lot of basic strikes. Eric recaps through Hogan burning the dark side. Bahena says he still has a black heart and only cares about himself. Morris really fucked up on the moonsault, barely, you know, almost whiffed and basically headbutts the arm on it.
Right.
Hogan, then he hulks up and just boos and apathy mixed in. Just awful. No one gave a shit, which it was kind of sad, actually. I was pretty checked out on Hogan at this point, but this is, like, real sad to watch. And then Hogan just hits you know, the usual really quick and gets out. And it just felt like a going through the motions, and the crowd is tuning him out. I want to start in three quarters because whatever, it's still the formula. But the crowd really does not give a shit at all about Hogan at this point, or at least this crowd. But it's becoming more and more of an issue. And it'll be interesting because they do start to find ways to try and combat it coming up over the coming months, and we'll see how that goes. But for right now, the crowd is not fully invested in Hulk Hogan, and he's not really helping himself out much with shit like this.
No, yeah, this is bad. So the encore presentation for the pay-per-view was at 5 on Tuesday. I thought that was a weird time. I don't know. That struck me as a very odd time.
For Starrcade?
For the encore presentation.
Oh, for the encore.
World War III.
5 o'clock? Yeah, I don't know why they would have done. Yeah, that is weird.
Just seemed weird. Anyway, we get a Macho Man interview.
Yep.
It was funny. As soon as he comes out, Mean Gene tries to shake his hand to congratulate him, and Macho completely hangs Mean Gene out to dry. like Gene has to physically get Macho's hand to shake it. Macho said he's proud he won, and then, of course, Hogan comes out.
Of course.
I did say the night before, you know, last week, that I didn't think Hogan was as whiny, and he had a legitimate case. This was a little much.
Yeah.
And then I thought this was pretty hokey. So Hogan goes to show the tape, but as soon as he's going to get pulled out under the ropes, it goes staticky.
Mm-hmm.
Malfunctions. Hogan mentions the nameplate, still says Hogan, and Macho's right. Like, I was getting that change, brother. I don't know. I mean, to me, this kind of makes – we get an angle after that. But, I mean, just on this first part, to me, this kind of makes Macho look sort of like a goof. You
right.
know what I mean? Because, I mean, what, he's not going to take Hogan's word for it? Or, I mean, did he butcher the tape? I mean, you know, what happened here is your – company doofus with production, you know, it's like,
well, no, so I take it as, and maybe I'm just reading too much into it, I took it as that the dungeon is fucking with them still.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that's what they want you to think, right. But I think there's also too many, I mean, I think that's the answer, but it's almost like Boss Man raising the briefcase where execution and everything else is so kind of fumbled that too many other questions kind of come into play where,
right.
I mean, you still get people like, oh, who, we never found out who raised a briefcase. It's like, well, yeah, we did. We found out. You know,
honest.
I think with this, I mean, the dungeon, I guess we're effing with Hogan, but I still don't know why Macho wouldn't believe him. And then it's like, right. again, it feels like we're going towards Macho versus Hogan. So
yeah, I think they were just really trying to make all of this ambiguous. like the whole main event picture. No one trusts anyone. They're all friends, but no one trusts each other. Hogan's pissed now that, you know, Savage shouldn't be champion and he should be. The Dungeon's fucking with them all. I think that's what they're aiming for, is that the Dungeon is playing all these mind games, and the Horsemen too. Like, they're all playing these mind games that are really all aimed to break up Savage, Hogan, and Luger. I mean, Savage, Hogan, and Sting. Like, that's what it all comes across, like, that they were trying to get. And it gets convoluted some weeks. Some weeks it's clearer, but I think that's what the overall angle is meant to be, that it's just the Dungeon and the Horsemen are trying to play mind games and fuck with these three top guys.
Yeah. So the Giant attacks after all this, and he chokeslams Macho on the entrance. I thought that looked good. Chases Hogan into the ring. Sting tries to help, and Hogan gets the chair. Hogan just continually rams the chair against the Giant mm-hmm. as the Giant kind of walks back up the entrance away from getting hit with the chair from that. And then, I mean, Hogan kind of is losing his mind, where, like, Sting has to try to hold Hogan back, and he's still wanting a piece of the Giant. So, I mean, this looks like they're riding out Macho as he was laid out during all this. Definitely is injured. They talk about him. Sting and Hogan checks on the Macho Man. Eric says, you know, Hulk's a lot of things, but he's not a physician. So it's kind of interesting, and sort of what you was talking about before, like when they do go back to the commentary talking about this, Eric mentions that, you know, well, hey, Sting pulled Hogan off of the Giant, who's a Dungeon of Doom member. So,
right.
You know, what's going on with that? And he throws to Bobby. So it's an overall segment. I think this had some high points and some low points. I did think the Giant again looked good. And he laid out the world champion, so he still looked strong, even though he, you know, I mean, between Havoc and World War III, sort of fumbled two chances to win the championship, but they're still presenting him strongly, which mm-hmm. is a positive.
Yeah, no, I think he's been the highlight of all these things, usually, when they break down into a fight. Yeah, so I thought the chokeslam on Savage and LaFleur looked pretty good, and then, yeah, Sting comes out. And you get the Hogan chair shots. But again, it's like even Hogan trying to get at him, like, just everything feels so not real. Like, he's just overacted to the point where it doesn't feel real. Like, it's forced and over the top. Like, even him trying to keep going to Giant, like, oh, you nasty, stinky Giant. I don't know. Like, it just feels like, again, like, it doesn't feel like a normal human being. It feels like someone acting what, you know, he's portraying what he thinks this person would be doing versus just doing it. Number one rule of improv. But yeah, it's very, I don't know, just, again, forced with Hogan. But I thought Giant looked great. He continues to be the best part of the angles. And Savage's bump on the floor was good, too. So, yeah, I mean, I like the way they're going about it, having all this confusion. And they're ahead of the game, because WWF will try it in a year. You know, they'll try to do the same stuff, having all the main eventers on even playing field. The title almost becomes a little bit of a hot potato because they're all equally matched. And all there's right. just a lot of subterfuge going on across the board. So Luger being kind of the linchpin between all of it, and Sting, as a result, is kind of caught in the middle, too. So to me, that's the highlight of all this. And then Giant and Savage kind of next. And then Hogan and Sullivan are kind of bringing up the rear when it comes to, like, the, you know, the peak parts of all these things. So anyway, pretty good segment, thanks to the Giant attack. But the interview itself is kind of blah.
All right. That kind of leads us right into our main event. So again, I mean, this was another kind of breakneck edition of Nitro where mm-hmm. stuff moved quick. So our main event is the Horsemen team of Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman versus Sting and Lex Luger. Sting's music's hit. He comes out on his own. No Luger. He waits a few seconds, and finally Luger comes out, even though they were late on the cue for his music to come out, which was kind of weird. And then Bobby had a pretty good line where he said, it's like going to divorce court and riding home together, talking about Sting and Luger. So Anderson and Pillman go right after Sting. Anderson hits the spine buster literally like 20 seconds into the match. Lex has to break that up. All four guys are in there. Sting comeback, double power slams by Sting and Luger for the Horsemen, which was a good looking spot. I thought Luger fought off Arn and Pillman well. He's getting a good crowd reaction. Pillman, of course, does his signature bump into the guardrail that he does now. And Sting gets a splash and has Arn in the Scorpion Deathlock. But Pillman goes to the top, and this was really cool. Where mm-hmm. so Sting's back is to where Pillman's coming to the top. Luger runs over and pushes Pillman off, and he goes into Sting. And yeah, it looks really good. Where like you're not sure if he did that on purpose or not.
Right.
I thought Eric was good on commentary saying, you know, if that was an accident, that's a pretty accurate accident.
Right.
That was a good way to word that. So that was cool. And then even on the outside, you had kind of Pillman and Luger talking to each other. Like you couldn't really tell if they were trash talking or colluding. And at that moment, Sting, you know, could have gotten the tag, but Luger wasn't there. So they're doing a couple of good moments with that. But eventually, Luger does help out. He puts the boots to Pillman and Arn, and Sting is able to roll up Pillman for the win, which was not a surprise. So another quick match, but I thought it was pretty good while it lasted. I gave it 2 stars. So why don't you talk about the match, and then we'll talk about our closing angle.
Okay, yeah. I always like how like a Luger saunters out after Sting. Like he's always on his own time, Luger. Does his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, the Spinebuster quick near fall was cool out of the gate. Mixed up the formula a little bit. Luger looks strong and fired up. The crowd's really into him. He's really been a highlight since his return. I mean, just character work in the ring and at times other than the Savage matches. But he's definitely been a real highlight. Like I'm curious if he didn't jump, what really would have been, you know, how this all would have played out without him. Like, I think he's been such a highlight of it all. Like, could it have been, what could it have been like without him there? So I'm glad that he did. So, Sting eventually gets trapped and worked over. The Horseman did some efficient double teaming. Again, we're kind of buzzing for time. And then you get the finish, you feel Flair coming in, and we'll get to that in a minute. So I went 2 stars to the actual match, you know, plus the post that we'll get to, but again, paint by numbers, but the crowd is into it. So.
Yeah. So Flair runs out at the bell to a huge pop. He goes after Luger. He posts him, and then Pillman gets the big splash on him. Flair gave Nick Patrick a great punch where he just goes, like, flying into where the camera is.
Yeah.
He puts Sting in the figure four. Now Hogan comes out for the save. Again, a bad reaction as Hogan goes face-to-face with Flair, and you could tell the crowd's definitely behind Flair here. You know, Flair's chopping, gets a face reaction. Then Hogan no-sells that. Kind of the Horsemen end up pulling Flair out when Hogan's about ready to make his comeback, and they regroup. Pillman, of course, is an absolute lunatic, yelling at the camera, just, you know, every screen time he can get. He makes the most of it. And then our very last thing in-ring-wise for the show is Hogan goes to punch Luger, and Sting kind of catches him. Pulls him up, and Sting and Hogan argue, even though Hogan said the night before he never would again, and he'd always trust Sting.
Already does.
So, yeah, broke that promise 24 hours later. But at the very end, they do handshake and hug as we go to our final break. So what did you think of this post-match?
Hogan overload tonight, and they picked the wrong night to really do it, too, like of all the arenas. But he's all over the place on this show. And, yeah, it was fine again. You know, the Horseman, the flying the ointment. And we'll get more of this Luger stuff, too, the inadvertent fucking with Sting. Like, and they do it really well. It's always very well executed where you just don't know. And he plays it off so nonchalantly every time, Luger, that you really don't know, too. Like, you don't know if he's fucking with Sting. Is he setting him up? Is he just a kind of a goof? Is he aloof? You know, it's like I think he's, like, the perfect character and personality to make something like this work. I think that's why it was so effective. Because you believe that he's friends with Sting, but you believe he also could be manipulated, that he doesn't like Hogan, that he wants the title. So it's like all this stuff is all believable. You could believe that he's fucking around with Sting. You could believe that he's just an accident. So he comes across as like any of these options could work, and I think that's why it works so well. Hogan, on the other hand, does not, because the crowd was not into him at all. And again, okay match, but a pretty. I thought the finish was pretty good, or the post match was pretty good, I should say. And yes, Pillman is awesome.
So then we get our, like, 1 minute wrap up with the announcers. No update on Macho Man. Mongo pushes the encore of World War III. And, they put over Savage winning the Battle Royal with one arm.
Mm-hmm.
We get no matches announced for next week, But Eric does say Saturday night we'll have a special announcement about Starrcade.
Yep.
And Bobby gives us a knowing look and waves the Japanese flag as we cut to black. So,
well, pretty good. I'm sure we'll be hearing about the World Cup coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, so there we go. Let's get into our awards. Okay. Match of the night, pretty easy call with the women again.
Yes.
And this will be our second hidden gem, I think, in a row for them two.
Yep.
For them four. So two matches as hidden gems on back-to-back nights. Really good showing for them. What did you have as kind of your segment of the night?
Segment of the night, I had Giant attacking.
I agree with that. I thought the choke slam to Savage was probably the most important thing.
Yep.
That happened on the show. So we'll see when Savage is back or what his condition is there. Who was your MVP?
I wanted the Kira Hokuto. I thought she was the star of that match. I thought she looked great, gets to win, and you could tell that maybe of all of them, she might be the one that ends up with some sort of push out of all this. And I thought she was awesome both nights, so I wanted to give her some love.
There you go. I ended up going with Sting. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm picking Sting a good bit lately, but I've enjoyed him in this run. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been involved and he hasn't been annoying. I mean, he's up against Hogan, but
it's interesting because I was thinking about this because kind of in an alternate timeline, this is like my nighttime viewing. I've been going through '98 WCW because I've been doing in order from like 1990 over the last like half a decade. But I'm in '98, and I was just thinking back is like, you know, Sting is Sting. He's so charismatic and energetic that I really wonder what would have happened if they didn't do the full year. And we'll get there, I guess, hopefully, but. If they didn't do what they did with him, because he is really good all through this stuff. Like, he's been great here. He's good into 96. And I don't know. Like, I really wonder if long-term that was the best. Like, the build ends up being great for him and Hogan, but you really wonder if in the long-term it did more damage than good. Like, what he could have been if he had stuck around, like, in this role, being an active participant in the show.
Yeah, we'll get there. But, yeah, it's kind of interesting where he's sort of the only person for that role.
Yeah.
But, was it overall good for the company? That'll be something we'll discuss. So what did you have for commentary?
Her eyes say no, but her lips say I want a checkbook, Bobby said about Kimberly. I think she's attracted a rather oriental way. They're doing some physical liposuction on that gut, Mongo said that at one point. And then hang on, I clicked off. Oh, he said that about Bull, by the way. Bull Nakata, physical liposuction. And then she's bigger than a Honda. That was the other one I had.
All right, there we go. The shots fired only had the Mongo line was the only big one.
There was one where they zoomed in on a very professionally done sign that said, if your Monday morning blahs turn raw by Monday night, then cure them both with nitro. That was 100% a plan. 100%
a plan. That was good.
It was really, really professionally done. And no fan is writing that on the fucking sign. And then Savage said, I am the only world champion. So
that is true. Yeah, that's right. He did throw that out there, so we did get that. No debuts, no dropped angles. Nope. Andre still has a son in the Giant.
Are you surprised how long that's lasted? Did you think you could drop
it? Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if Gene was just sort of filibustering the night before when he was mentioning, you know, your father would be disappointed in you or – what was going on. But yeah, it's kind of time to cool that.
Yeah.
And the rating was a 2.5, which was the same as the week before. Okay. So.
And where'd you go to the show grid?
I went 5 out of 10. It's kind of a tough show to grade because there was a good bit of stuff that hurt me, but, you know, you had a real good match for TV and, there was some good spots too. This was like one good Hogan performance away from being a really good show. And even with that, it's still interesting to see him get so booed because again, I mean, I just didn't think like you said, the formula is there. Like this is stuff that was successful for so long and now it's just not. Like it's almost like a sports team of old veterans that just run out there for one season and everybody's just completely gassed and, right. You know, they end up going like 500 or so. You know, there's some like 2004 Laker vibes going on here.
I went 5.5 out of 10, which puts it a little touch below World War III. You know, again, the highlight was the women's match. And then, like you said, not too much. The Hogan overload with him just not being over and kind of sucking really dragged down the show. So, All right, why don't we head over to Raw on the other channel, same night, of course, 11/27/95. Where are we tonight on the show? Still in the same
spot. Oh, yeah, same spot. And where was it? I actually had my notes, and then it went away. My screen flipped.
You never know. It's a freeze, flip. You never know what could happen with that screen.
My screen flipped, so let's see what Graham has.
We're still
here.
In Richmond,
Virginia.
Oh, so we're so both
in Virginia.
Yeah, both in Virginia. Yeah, well, no, we actually. So we are, but we're not, right? Because this show was taped a week ago. So they're not there concurrently.
Right.
But both shows are from there. So.
Right, right. Yeah, so this is a first tape show of the taping. We get a kind of somber Vince shows us the clips of the week before with Sean collapsing.
Very somber.
He tells us this is a stark reminder of the danger that occurs in wrestling. So your parental discretion is advised. Please don't try this at home.
Very stark.
Montage from Vince. Our opening gives us Vince and King at ringside. They tell us that Kama versus Undertaker is happening tonight on Raw.
Big star sandwich.
And then we also have a special stipulation where the power of the Undertaker is at stake, where this is his last chance to regain the chain. Now, why? Who knows? But apparently it is.
Now or never. They have really milked SummerSlam, by the way. Like, how many, like, Brett and Yankum went on forever. Yeah. Diesel and Mabel is, like, still a thing we have to get to again. Like, it's like they have really milked the SummerSlam feuds for the whole back end of this year.
And then we also learn that Brother Love is going to be interviewing Bret Hart. Waller is all fired up about that. And then Vince gets in a pot shot on Pritchard right out of the gate, where he says he's heard Brother Love has gained quite a deal bit of weight since the last time we saw him. So
he said in a minute, he says he's fatter and redder than ever.
So he's really, I don't know.
He's probably not wrong.
I mean, he's not wrong, but I mean, come on, that does not help anything, but yeah, whatever. Popping the boys in the back, I guess. Mini Mac. And that leads us right into our first match. And what a match it was. Rad Radford versus Ahmed Johnson. Johnson had some pretty good presence coming out, I thought.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this was one of those moments where you can tell the show was taped because, you know, when Ahmed walks out, they do a kind of overhead shot of him walking out. And you can clearly see that Vince and King are not at ringside in that shot. And they just were standing next to the ring like 1 second before they cut to that shot.
Well, maybe they were moving. Maybe they were in transit to the booth. You know?
So I guess they're the Flash because they completely disappeared. But, I mean, this match is nothing. Radford attacks Ahmed from behind. Ahmed recovers and punches Radford over the top rope. Now, this may be our first, I would say, significant shots fired from WWF side, where King says that he hears that Ahmed has 24-inch arms. So he mentions that. He makes a joke out of it. Says, you know, he's got 24-inch arms and an IQ to match that. But yeah, I mean, so the 24, you know, I don't think that's just a random number they threw out on the 24-inch Python.
No, it was probably just King taking a shot. Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, so there we go. I put that as a shots fired.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know that, so it was a good catch.
We got clips from Backlund in the car. He's in the crowd doing God knows what. That comes into play later. Ahmed's killing Radford with his... I guess his quasi-karate moveset. I don't know. He hits him with a scissor kick, a front kick. King says Ahmed had turkey for Thanksgiving because he's in a foul mood. Just
awful.
Lame line. Spine buster and Pearl River plunge by Ahmed. This was a straight squash. Thought he looked pretty impressive in some of his stuff. The street foo, I guess we're coining it, was not. But his power moves look good, and he's getting a good crowd reaction. So I went 1.5 stars just for the squash.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, Vince must have just been drooling at this. I mean, the guy has a great look, great charisma. The crowd's into him, and just letting him murder guys with these big power moves. Like, he has star written on him at this point. Like, you can see it. He just looks great. And the crowd is into him. We also had Backlund campaigning in the crowd during this match for his president run at the presidency in 96. King pushes a Dean Douglas Ahmed Johnson feud. Vince says they'll be fighting it in your house. So we got that match announced. And then, yeah, he hits the plunge. It was a good squash. Rad does the job as he should.
Yeah, and then King ends up interviewing Ahmed afterwards. He gets a line and he says, when you graduated from kindergarten, you were so excited you could barely shave without cutting yourself. So that was pretty good. We find out that it's Dean Douglas versus Ahmed set up for In Your House. Now, I mean, it kind of felt like this sort of came out of nowhere, or am I missing something?
Well, I guess, I mean, they kind of were involved at Survivor Series, right? They're on the team, so I guess. But they kind of planted up that they're making Ahmed out to be dumb, right? I mean, that's what King is talking about, being stupid. So I think that's just the natural tie-in that they're doing here, is that Dean, you know, is coming out because Ahmed's an idiot and he wants to take him to class. So
Dean comes out. He's jawing with Ahmed. I thought Dean looked – he kind of feels like some fodder, as we talked about, though. I mean, this definitely feels like – I mean, Dean's a name, so Ahmed's not going to straight squash him, but, you know, he's going to beat him for sure. Dean says that training in the WWF takes place in his classroom. Ahmed challenges him and then acts like he's going in to the ring before the refs break it up. So Lawler at one point calls for Vince to intervene, and Vince is like, what can I do? So that was funny. You know, pretty good interview with Ahmed. I didn't have no problems with this.
No.
He definitely looks like a star on the rise.
Yep, agreed.
Then our next thing was basically the sob story of Shawn Michaels, where we get a rundown of all his struggles. We say Vince is still using the Nine Thugs line. We learn he had dizziness, nausea, depression, and some blackouts that only his close friends knew about. And now, you know, come to find out these are the prime symptoms for post-concussion syndrome. They show clips. I thought this was good, where they show clips of the Razor's Edge powerbomb from Sid and leg drop from Yoko.
Yep.
That happened to him in the wild card match. And then that's kind of it. So we're sort of seeing the story of that he was coming into that match last week, you know, wounded, and it obviously paid a toll.
Yeah, this is well done, his tough fall of 95. So, yeah, no, I thought they did a good job recapping it all. And, yes, I think this is one of the first time they really get into the concussion stuff, like post-concussion syndrome. Like, Vince was announced, like, it's a new thing. You know, it's like, now we found out this is called post-concussion syndrome. and that he should not have been wrestling at Survivor Series or here, which questions why he was cleared, but that's a whole other story. Basically says Sean hit it from everyone. So, yeah, just really hyping up the stop story and the heat for Sean while he's out. So, well done.
That leads us into our second match, which, like on WCW, is a women's match. It's Aja Kong and Tomoko Watanabe versus Alundra Blaze and Kyoko Inoue. Lawler says, eat your heart out, Princess Di. So she was mentioned on both shows, as we talked about before.
Oh, we get a lot of classic King
Vince. Yeah, he also asks if Kyoko got the Beatles back together. So he rolls that out right away. now, right before this match, we have Deditsky.
Oh, yes.
Shilling a Bret Hart shirt, which had about 25 words on it.
Oh, so
it was like, I mean, this was a hideous shirt. It says, like, the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be on the front. It had some writing on the back, a ton of writing I couldn't even make out. It was awful.
I don't know who was designing this fucking merchandise.
And Vince, like, is done with it. He cuts him off.
He calls him Hop Sing.
he basically says, oh, we gotta get to the action, Barry. It's like, see you later.
But it's like, even Vince gets in on the
yeah, he's done. Vince is like, we gotta go to the action, Barry. So he's done.
Well, no, he calls him Hop Sing, though, so even he's getting out of the race.
Does he? And he leaves.
Yeah. Also, King, when Aja's coming out, he gets the Beatles line, but he also says we don't have to worry about Aja having bulimia. So it was is Princess Di bulimia, maybe? Was that part of, like, because he almost references it.
I'm not a Princess Di historian. Maybe some of our Callum McDougal can weigh in.
I don't see anything in Wikipedia about it. So. Oh, no, it does. Yeah, right here. In that interview. She talked about depression, rampant bulimia, and numerous times acted in self-mutilation. So that had to be a shot of that, too.
Yeah. So Kyoko and Alundra have a double dropkick right out of the gate. A bigger fan is shown in the crowd.
She was a fat girl.
Yeah, so Lawler calls her Queen Kong.
No, no. Oh, I thought he said Lee Kong. Did he say Queen?
I got Queen, maybe. Oh, I like to put on the closed caption.
Queen makes more sense than Lee Kong. But Lee Kong made me laugh for some reason. Yes, he says it's Aja's American counterpart. Yeah, he probably said Queen Kong. That's right. That makes more sense.
Okay, now, and then Vince... I mean, I sent you a screenshot of this, but, I mean, Vince is talking about Aja having a couple of extra chromosomes, and it's some weird commentary.
He's making kinds of shots at it. I mean, both of them. At least in WCW, it's only Bobby and, like, Eric and Mongo are kind of treating it with, like, Vince is just all in on it here, too. Because you got Kong is just wrecking Inoue, you smash with the body block, and Vince is just making shots. And, like, this is, like, a treat, and Vince is wasting it with racist fat jokes instead of trying to make it special. Like, it's, you know, like, you're trying to get anything over on WCW. Here's a cool moment where you can really have something stand out. Like, this is something you don't have usually offer. And, like, you're turning your fans off, but it's calling them fat and making racist jokes. You know, you're unleashing King, which is bad enough as it is. You're letting him off the leash. And then Vince is getting on it, too, so...
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So, as you said, Kyoko is getting completely beat up. She does turn the tide and hits Watanabe in a surfboard, which I thought was cool. And then King's like, yeah, that's the problem with that move is you can get your own shoulders pinned. That was, like, the only good commentary line he had. So, I don't know if I've ever seen Jerry locking a surfboard, but I guess he knew the psychology of it.
We get a big moment here, too, where they announce that Mr. Perfect will be on AOL later. And also that he's going to be taking over for the King on Superstars as the color commentator. So.
Good. Probably a smart choice. I thought Alundra looked really good in this match.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I think she sort of struggles when she's in there with, quite frankly, better wrestlers like to kind of keep up. I mean, she usually does serviceable, but like in the SummerSlam 94 match, for instance, I thought Bull was, you know, better, obviously. But she was good here. She was very stiff and looked very fresh, and everything looked slick, which was nice. And then Kyoko and Aja, that's kind of one of the great, like, underdog versus big heel stories in Joshi. So it's always nice when they match up. Aja hits a suplex as we go to break. Back from break, Inoue and Watanabe are fighting each other, and Inoue cleans house. And I did notice here the crowd heat wasn't near as good as the WCW match.
No.
So, you know. Kind of goes without saying, but Kyoko does her signature where she runs up to the top rope and then does a back elbow drop. She kind of did it to the thigh of Watanabe here, which was, I don't know if that was on purpose or not, but it looked different if nothing else. And then Tomoko is able to hit the flying body press, but Inoue climbs the ropes and slings her off, which I thought was another good spot. Alundra comes in and Aja just steps in and gives her a vicious kick. But Alundra comes back with a nice enziguri that had some stiffness to it and then hits a good drop kick series, but misses the third. Aja misses a splash. So they're back and forth. Vince at this point says there's trouble in River City, which, okay. And then he says Aja is a proponent of safe sex.
Just like Princess Di.
Yeah, so there we go. And then Inoue tries a double powerbomb on Aja, which, of course, isn't going to happen. And Aja wastes her with her spinning back fist to get the win. So I thought Aja looked great again. Yeah. And I actually had this on par with the Nitro match.
Really?
I didn't think I would, but... I just like the dynamic of Kyoko and Aja together, and I thought Aja looked I'd probably put Aja as my favorite of all eight women, actually. And Alundra impressed me, so I went 3.25 on this one, too.
Okay, I went 2.75. I think the commentary really took a lot out of it for me. I just even in my notes, I got a lot of notes on the commentary, so I think it was distracting me. Kong lands some big kicks in, some stiff kicks, and King says asked if she could kick for the Jets. So I didn't know if like I meant to look it up if the Jets lost on like a field goal or something big that weekend. Inoue comes back with, on Watanabe and gets a nice pop for that top rope arm drag. I thought that was nice. I like the Lundra ducking the back fist, shows that she learned from the night before. I thought that was a nice little touch. And lands some drop kicks, misses that third one. The pace really picks up late. That's when we get the safe sex line, and then the back fist was nasty. It was fun. It was a little steps. I found it a step slower than the other stuff we watched, and the commentary burying it really turned me off. But Kong looks great. Like, she deserved better than how she's treated on commentary. And I, you know, it's tough because, again, just like WCW, if you really look, they had the makings of what could have been a division here if they would have kept with it, and it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, they may actually be in a little bit better shape than WCW just because they have a Lundra. You have somebody marketable to that audience.
Right.
It's
too bad that that is wasted on this nonsense and that it ends up going nowhere. So.
Right. Then we get clips of Diesel snapping at Survivor Series and his promo from last week. That sets us up to the Brother Love segment with Bret Hart. I'm interested to see what you thought about this. I was not a fan. Love calls Hart a marked man. Vince runs down all the people against Bret. Love asks what his toughest match ever, but he kind of pulls the mic out before Bret can answer. They keep bringing up Taker as a contender. And Brother Love asks him another question, and as soon as Brett's about to answer, Brother Love pulls the microphone back, and then Brett finally grabs the mic and says, you know, to achieve great things, you have to live life like you're never going to die, which was a great bit of philosophy from the Hitman. and then Hart says that what Diesel did was cheap, and he always was cheap. He then moves on to The Undertaker and says he will cross that bridge when it comes. And then finally we get some hype for the Davey Boy Smith match, mm-hmm. and they do show a clip of the 92 SummerSlam match with Davey pinning Brett, which I liked. So I thought this was a good promo against Davey, and Hart says it's a dog-eat-dog world, and the Bulldog will find out about that in your house. And then we have Bob Backlund running in. Kind of randomly. I mean, I guess not. They've been feuding forever, but still. So he runs in and attacks the Hitman, applies the crossface chicken wing on the Brother Love podium. So this was just a misfire for me because I understand what they're doing. They're trying to bring up all these opponents, but I thought that, I thought they'd done such a good job of building up Davey Boy Smith as credible in the weeks leading up to this. And if you're bringing up, you know, possible matches with Taker and all this stuff, and especially Backlund, I mean, Backlund's cooked. Like, they just need to go beyond that. And even King on commentary is acting like he still wants a piece at him. So, I mean, on one hand, I get that this is a fighting champion or whatever.
Yeah, I think they're trying to make it just everyone wants a shot at the title. They all hate Brett, and they all want.
Work for me as a baby face, and I think that he's going to win the match at In Your House 5.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're bringing up The Undertaker, you know he's not going to lose to Davey Boy Smith.
Right.
Because what feud does he have with The Undertaker besides, you know, Taker wants to become the champion?
Right. Well, I think this is that Taker's finally wants the belt, and he's starting to talk about it. So I think it's just a natural question, like, oh, you know, you might have to deal with this guy too, by the way. You know, I don't think they were clearly setting it up. I mean, they were, but I don't think it's like I don't think it's at the expense of Bulldog. I think it's more that they're just trying to show that the challenges that Brett's facing are really mounting. The Jets lost 16 to 10. They only, it's the last win of the year. They went 3-13 that year. So I don't know what he's talking about. Nick Lowry was 3-4 kicking in that game. So I don't know if he had a bad year or if it was just a throwaway line because the Jets were local and he saw the hard kick or not. But anyway, that aside, I did like this. Vince gets more weight jokes in, and he's not wrong. I mean, Pritchard's looking pretty hefty here, Brother Love. But Love picks up right where he left off, trolling, not letting his guest speak. Like, he was right back into the gimmick Talks about all the challengers, like you said. Talks about his making his mother cry because he's always fighting members of his family. So that was kind of a douchebag comment. And then Brett just kind of takes over. I like when Undertaker cuts in. I mean, when Love cuts in about Bulldog and Helen. And Brett just tells him to shut the fuck up, basically. And then he says he wants redemption for Hershey Park. In Hershey, he wants redemption for London. SummerSlam 92. So I like that they're tying that in. And then I liked Love mocking Brett as he was in the crossface. I think it's just more that Backlund's nuts. He happened to be in the crowd, saw Brett and snapped. And it's always kind of been his MO. So I don't mind this. I think they're fine. They're just lining up that all these heels are gunning for Brett. There's a new champion in town. It's never easy at the top. And
that always works to me better if it's a heel champion.
Yeah.
I do not like that. I think there's a way to convey a fighting champion. You know, if you want to do random opponents or whatever on Raw, but this significantly cheapened my interest in Brett versus Bulldog. Okay. I mean, even knowing what was going to happen, I had been really anticipating that match because I was like, well, the build has been so strong. And, you know, he was talking about, you know, Davey Boy was talking about stuff like beating Brett before Brett and Diesel had their match, so I thought that was good, you know, that he was setting up with both opponents.
Well, isn't that what Undertaker is kind of doing, too? I mean,
he's not mentioning nothing about Davey Boy, and
he just said he wants a title, though, and they're also talking to his Brett about it. But they haven't talked to Davey about it.
If you're semi-smart, you know Davey Boy versus Undertaker isn't going to be
right. Well, if you're semi-smart, you know that Bulldog's probably not winning right after Brett had finally won the title anyway.
I think it's actually a little possible. I just think it's significantly less now if you're talking about that. And then you have Backlund, who got beat by Diesel in 8 seconds for the title and hasn't really been looked too credible since then.
Well, they're not really saying he's credible, though. He's just attacking
him. I understand that, but he's attacking him. That makes no sense. Like, why? What's it matter? I mean, that'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see Arn Anderson running out in WCW and beating up Hulk
Stay
Hogan
tuned.
By himself. by
tuned.
Himself. By Stay himself. Tuned. Not the, by himself.
The I did think Brother Love was welcome. A welcome addition, though. I like...
Oh, God.
No.
How?
No. They don't really have, like, a heel shitster. Like, he's kind of good at the role. I don't know. I thought he was
funny. He's annoying. He was annoying in his segments in the 80s and 90s. He was more annoying here.
Yeah, I don't mind him.
Yeah. No, he's not credible. I mean, I just think it feels like even in 95, we should be beyond that. Like a televangelist knockoff that felt
I think they were looking for a credible. I think they were missing, in their minds, they were missing a talk show kind of guy. Like King's Court had kind of petered, and they really didn't have much else going on or anyone. So I'm guessing they brought him back just to help further stuff like this along.
I think could have done something with Diesel. I mean, just have him. Or, you know, you don't have to have that. Just move on from that as a concept.
They did, that's all. Yeah.
Yeah,
could have the truck stop. Is that what you're saying, maybe?
Have the foresight just to move on from that, I think, is the best
case.
They
do. I mean, it doesn't last that long. So
you went through since, I mean, Brother Love started in, what, 89? Early 89. Mm-hmm. So you had all that, and then the funeral parlor and Heartbreak Hotel and all that mess, King's Court. So we've had 5 to 6 years of this stuff.
Heartbreak Hotel, yeah. Brother Love went through 91, WrestleMania 7, right before WrestleMania 7.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but when did he start?
Oh, like
89, right? Or 88. Yeah, so yeah, we're talking 7 years. Just move on.
The Nick Lowry was 17 of 21 that year for 81%.
Oh, my God. He's still on.
The next year, he was 70%. That's the year they go 1 of 15. Mm-hmm. He was 17 of 24. He was also 40 years old.
There we go. Justice for Nick here.
Okay. All right. Let's get to our next match.
All right. So, I mean, it's nothing. It's Hunter-Hurst Hemsley versus John Crystal. We saw that Finkel got slopped at house show in MSG last weekend. Hog Henry O. Godwin has a insert promo where he's talking about what was the name of the pig, Priscilla or something like
that.
Says,
"Well, we'll meet them in Hershey." So
yeah, so he's bringing the whole gang there. we got a weird kind of snobbish Hunter Hearst Hemsley shirt in the crowd, so that was interesting. This was literally your simple straight squash. Crystal got two slaps in of total offense. So Hunter wins with the high knee, and then the pedigree. I went a quarter star, but nothing here.
Yeah, Dudaroo. Just nothing. Again, like you said, Vince did note they're signed for a series of slot matches. So they've been referencing this a little bit on and off, like the house show run stuff, like basically admitting that they're wrestling around the country. So he says they're signed for a series of slot matches, and then we'll get the hog pen in your house to kind of close it out. So, and then we get the Fink getting slopped clip to sell the house show stuff. So.
Then we get another batch amount announced for In Your House, which is Razor Ramon and Marty Jannetty versus Sid and 1-2-3 Kid. That leads us into Jim Cornette, Owen Hart promo. So It's Cornette and Owen this week instead of Cornette and Davey. Cornette says that after what he did with HBK, it's tough to find opponents for Owen. And so they've set up an open contract for In Your House. So I thought that was a pretty good good idea to do that with Owen.
Yeah, I mean, after you might as well make the Sean thing a double win, right? You get the Sean get knocked, put him on the shelf so they can build the heat for his return, and then you get Owen over as a killer as well. So
sets us up for our big main event, which is Undertaker versus Kama. Kama comes out with crutches. DiBiase does a little bit of a promo, and we find out that Mo is the replacement. So
how underwhelming. Just as underwhelming as it gets to have Mo as the big fucking replacement for Kama. Yeah.
Lawler and Vince are still wigging out about Undertaker's mask. Real, real basic match here. Basic start. Mo sends Taker to the outside, grabs DiBiase by the throat, and now, you know, Kama's miraculously healed.
He and the chain is still on the line, by the way, as well.
right. So Mo taking up the mantle for the chain. Vince says he just saw Mabel as we go to break. This is a weird, like, paranoid Vince. Right. I mean, obviously he'll be right at the end of the show, but I mean, how did he know Mabel was there? Like, he is kind of, it's like the crazy person that actually predicts it correctly. It didn't make sense.
I guess for once, at least, I guess you can say the commentator's not an idiot for once, right? Like, he's actually kind of perceiving that something's up instead of playing
dumb.
I bet we'll see
Mabel before the night's over. I mean, don't say you've spotted a 500-pound black.
No, that was just Vince always does that. That's just his, like, pre-break tease to make you think something was going to happen when you come back. Is that Mabel? And then they go out. He does that a bunch, like, teasing that something's happening in the back where someone's coming out, and then you come back and it's a fucking head chin lock or whatever.
Mo's hurts his hand as he punches Taker in the mask. Mo has some awful punches, like just a ton of air. Mo sucks. A really weak big boot by Taker. Taker rolls to the outside, takes out Kama on the steps, and then DiBiase scurries away. Weak slam by Taker as Kama and Ted leave. And then we get a choke slam on Mo, and Mo does about the worst selling job on that.
He does the Hogan shiver.
Yeah, does a complete seizure in the ring, and that gets the 1-2-3. I went 3/4 star. I didn't think this was good at all. The strikes looked terrible. It was bad. You want to talk about the match, and then we'll talk about our hot angle at the end.
I went 1.5 stars, which I mean, it's crazy that 1.5 stars seems high for these matches, but here we are. Vince mentions Taker hasn't been on Raw since he got his face smashed back in the 6-man in October, so it's been a while since he's on. Then he does the wondering about Mabel, and I guess this is pretty much it for Taker and DiBiase finally. I mean, that feud started in the summer of 1994. And this is pretty much it, because it kind of symbolically, like, DiBiase's been holding the urn over him forever. Like since IRS took it, I think, was the... Well, I guess really since Fake Taker.
Yeah.
When DiBiase took it from Bearer. Ongoing since, again, IRS took it, and the Kama took it. So, like, this pretty much is, like, the passing of the torch from DiBiase to Men on a Mission. And it pretty much exits DiBiase left from the Taker stuff, for that's been going on for 16 months or so. They're finally breaking up. This marriage that they've had going on forever, so that's done. And him, and like you said, him and Kama just kind of vanish, and that's it. The choke samples look good. The shiver was not as good. And then so that's it for the win and whatever garbage.
So after the match, here does come Mabel. He makes his way to ringside. Taker takes back his gold chain. Vince is just way over the top of this. Right. You know, he has the power. He, blah, blah, blah. Yokozuna also comes out and gets in the ring. Vince says, we get a match after the match when, I mean, no one had touched yet at right. that point. So and that's like the crowd chanting, this is awesome before they lock up. So Vince going nuts. Mabel hammers Bear, Paul Bear from behind, and then he steals the chain and like runs away, basically scurries away like a thief in the night. I thought this looked kind of silly.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of enough with this. People stealing the urn or the chain. It just feels so one note. Like
I think this is pretty much it, I think, for it.
Yeah. Is this the only thing you can do with the guy?
The good thing is with Taker, like the end of 95 finally brings an end to the real hokey stuff. 96 is when they start to legitimize him a little bit as a threat and a contender. So that's coming at least. But yeah, he's yes, the chain and the urn and like this stuff is reaching its end. They are trying to make Taker look strong though. Like they're definitely lining him up for something because here he's fighting off all the heels. They're swarming him. Like I thought that part was fine, and the crowd is into it all. So I'll give them that. I mean, they love Taker regardless of all the shit he's been through the last 3 years. Like they're still fully in his corner. They have never turned on him since he turned face in '92.
Right. So then we just get like a 30-second. Rundown of next week where we're going to have Sid versus Marty Jannetty in the Intercontinental title match between Razor Ramon and Dean Douglas.
Yep.
So that's all we got to look forward to. All right, let's get to our awards here.
Okay.
Match of the night. I assume we're going with the women.
Yes.
As well here. So they sweep segment of the night.
I went Brother Love. I like the heart stuff better than you, so.
Okay. I did not like that, so I had pretty slim pickings otherwise because I also didn't like Mabel running away with the chain. So I ended up at the Ahmed interview as my segment of the night. Your MVP?
I went Brett. I liked him in that interview.
Okay. I did Aja Khan there. I thought she looked strong and probably should have had a singles match at In Your House 5 with Alondra. Commentary, what do you got?
Well, I mentioned a lot of them during the women's match that I didn't put here, but get a look at all, man, Vince says about Ahmed as he comes out. And then let's go to Hop Singh Dedinsky, Vince says, in a very racist moment because the Japanese women are coming out.
So no debuts, no dropped angles. We'll call the, I guess, DiBiase running away a fitting conclusion to the 18 months of storyline he had with Undertaker there.
Yeah,
for sure. So they got a 2.3 in the ratings, so Nitro won this week as well. The same exact ratings for both shows as last week. So that's kind of interesting.
And then I went
and your grade.
I went 5 out of 10.
All right, yeah, I was a good bit lower than that. I went 3.5 out of 10.
God, is that your lowest?
No. I've went 1.5 out of 10 for In Your House 4 and the Wall afterwards. Right. Yeah. I've got a couple of threes in there, too, I think. I should, yeah. I mean, this had one good match, but besides that and Ahmed, like, I didn't like anything else.
So that's half the show.
Tough. It's tough for me to give too much credence to that. I mean, it's just I really thought they had a hot show last week, too.
Yeah.
And we got some stuff with Sean and Diesel. I mean, they at least showed some packages.
Right.
But it's kind of the way they structure things where it's, you know, 1 week on and 1 week off. And say what you will about WCW, but we see most of the main players every week. And it's just.
It is the big difference between the two shows. That is clear. Yeah. You're right. They're still very formulaic on Raw. Like you said, Bob and Weave, in and out. And whereas Nitro is every week is important. Every week is urgent. Every week we're getting movement. Every week they're getting big matches. And Raw, you get the one big match a week and move on. So they're still very much in that old framework. We'll see when they finally get out of it. But for right now, they're still kind of locked in. I think the hard thing was probably the linchpin for me, like to go higher than you because I liked it and you didn't. So I'm guessing that was kind of the swing moment. And again, the crowd being it to take or help that main event stuff as well. So.
Right.
Why don't we do our combos? Best show to me, Nitro was still better, even though it wasn't a great Nitro.
Yeah, I agree.
Best match, I would go with the WCW Japanese women.
Yeah, I mean, I ranked them the same, so I'm fine with that.
Okay. Best segment.
Well, I'd probably go with Giant choke slamming. Savage. I mean, I just think even me not liking the Brett stuff, I still think that was probably the most important thing that happened on both nights. Yep. Was on both shows was probably that. So.
All right, better commentary. I'd go Nitro.
Yeah, I go Nitro there pretty easily, actually. Okay. Kind of odd. I mean, Raw commentary, I think they probably won more weeks than not. And yeah, I thought this was pretty good slam dunk for Nitro this week.
All right, and you're a star of the night?
This one's tough. I mean, I don't think there was one big star. I don't know. What's your...
I like Hokuto. I mean, I thought she looked great in the women's match. She was my pick on Nitro.
I mean, you can go for that. I'm fine with that.
Okay. I think she deserves some love. I mean, she had really good showing.
She can get a shout-out.
And then the ratings winner was Nitro, so...
Right. So, pretty good sweep for... That was a sweep for Nitro across the board, right?
Yeah, down.
We'll see. I mean, next week, even... I mean, we got an Intercontinental title match announced, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll give you a hint that I thought this Raw was worse. Next week's Raw is worse than this one in my mind. So.
Oh, my God.
See what you think.
Well, hope you've enjoyed the last episode of Wrestling Warzone.
But Nitro, I like Nitro, so we'll get there. All right. Okay. So that's coming up. We'll get to that, I'm sure, again soon, the 12th week of 12-4. We're steamrolling toward the end of the year. Before you know it, Chad, it'll be in 1996, and you can join us in... Yeah, at our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com, in the 1996, the year that was Project, we have a really robust watch list for January. A lot of links and a lot of matches to check out across the board, beyond just the big stuff. Like, we got Worldwide, we got Pro, you know, like all kinds of stuff in there, superstars, both segments and matches. So check that out at bigelow34.proboards.com. You can get involved. Also dropping on the message board are the results of the GWWE Tag Team Project. I think ended up around just under 400 tag teams got a vote. So we're down to, so far, let me just get what's posted here. So, 399. I'm sorry, 400 teams, I think, got a vote. So from 400 through 258 have been posted so far. So you can go there, you can look at the results, and also leave your comments as well. And also on the board, you can share any feedback you want read on air for shows that we're working our way through, too. So, also, we had a brand new Place to Be podcast this week. Me, Scott, and Peter Winston looked at the January 89 Saturday's Main Event. They all blend. Saturday's Main Event this past week. So, check that out as we're into 89, heading toward WrestleMania 5. And actually, that's it. Well, have I talked about Suburban Commando yet? I guess that dropped last week, too. So check that out. Freak Out Drive. And I joined Jennifer Smith to look at Suburban Commando. Anything you want to talk about?
This is the only thing I do.
All right. So. Well, keep an eye out on our social media. So this is dropping Wednesday nights. Big news coming careening at you over the weekend. So be sure to check that out as well. You'll see it coming on social media. So. All right, for Chad, I'm JT. Smell that napalm. We'll be back soon.